Welcome to Nkwazi Unfiltered. It's the place where we get to find out a little bit more about some of Zambia's most interesting individuals. Today's no exception. We have a gentleman who needs no introduction, but for purposes of being politically correct, we will introduce him. He is a man of many talents. He's a political scientist. He's also a venture capital expert. He sits on several boards. He's held numerous executive positions in some of the top companies in Zambia and abroad. And he's also, very interestingly, the dean of Drip University. Yeah, if that doesn't give him away by now, then you're probably someone who's never been on social media. But the role that he's probably best known for is the fact that he's a special assistant to the president for economic affairs. This is none other than Jito Kayumba. Welcome, Jito.
Thank you so much for having me.
First things first, that sparkling resume, what did I miss out?
Well, I'm an investment professional.
Right.
Ultimately, that's what encapsulates me. My first degree was certainly in political science, which is it's got a multiplicity of elements. You can't do political science without economics. You can't
right.
do it without legal systems, because ultimately it's about how a society is structured, how it's managed, and how you place certain strategic elements like policy in order to make that society progress.
Right.
So really that's what it is. But I've never really had to apply that, to be honest, in my life. So when I went and did my MBA, and of course, had the incredible privilege of working in a finance firm, a venture finance firm.
Right.
It exposed me into the world of finance, into accounting, into financial modeling, into structuring of investments. And that's ultimately what made me into an investment professional. So that's really the core of who I am professionally and where I apply myself best.
You're a very busy man, but somehow you managed to balance your busy life with social media presence.
Sure.
Very well curated social media. But even though we see a lot, you're still a man of mystery. What's that all about?
Well, I think it's important to be very deliberate with what you share.
Right.
You know, social media, and one must see it this way, that it's a reflection of what actually is happening in my life from a work perspective. So unfortunately, I've put together a team that does the coverage, that does the shooting, and they handle that. All I do is focus on the work.
Right.
So the social media in itself doesn't require much work from my side. All I do is focus on delivering the work, which then gets captured by others. So I think in life, you have to be systematic, and it makes you more productive. It makes you successful in any endeavor that you're involved in. So that's on that part. But the mystery part, again, is very deliberate. I'm a big believer that, you know, we live in a world where, you know, there's certain things that it's okay to share, but the things that you hold more dear, you better you don't.
Yeah.
Especially in the public eye.
Right.
You know, you've got a lot of things that happen where there can be a high degree of negativity. I mean, I could take shots. People can write negative things, falsehoods. It happens.
Yeah.
It comes with the territory.
Yeah.
But they're close loved ones who I have, who I would never want to expose them into that environment, because they become subject to attack. And, you know, there's a saying that what people don't know, they can't destroy. And
words of wisdom.
You know, so with that being said, I'd rather focus the aspects. And also the reality is I find peace within the private world that I've created for myself, with family, with close friends, where that's really where I believe I'm the best version of myself. Of course, the professional world is connected to the public eye. So this is why I believe that, you know, in this century where you've got a large Gen Z population who essentially are very much on social media, it's very important to be a strong communicator, to be present where their eyeballs are in order for them to have an appreciation of what you're doing work-wise. Because guess what? I work for them. So this is why I will show them what is relevant to them. But there's certain things that are not relevant to them, like what I'm having for breakfast. There's some people who overshare. You know, oh, this is my child.
My eggs. But, no,
exactly. I was like, no. You will see the work that will benefit you. That mine that we're opening, that new energy plant, that new agricultural investment, that will employ you, that will generate the value that helps your economy be better, so you have a better life. So that's what I would continue to share.
Yeah.
And who knows how life will unfold? Maybe I might write a book one day. I get asked a lot. where I can now reveal a bit more.
Yes.
So people understand the balance between my private and my public life.
Oh, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Now, let's imagine you're sitting on a plane going somewhere and you're sitting next to a person who has absolutely no clue who you are. Yeah. And they introduce themselves to you. And how would you introduce yourself to them?
I would obviously say I'm very proud of my name because of the fact that it is a very inherently Zambian name.
Mm-hmm.
From my father's home village in the western part of Solwezi,
right.
In the Mutanda area.
Right.
So Jito Kayumba is obviously who I am, as you all know, and you've stated before. And I would go into the details of the fact that my name has a lot of history, a lot of cultural depth in it.
Mm.
Essentially describes a natural environment where you've got a forest, you've got a river flowing. It's a beautiful natural environment.
Right.
It's an ecosystem that sustains life. It is consistent, and it's obviously an environment that is productive. And to me, that is ultimately what I feel encapsulates my character. I like to be a productive person. I like to be a positive force for any environment I'm in. I would go on to share that I'm an investment professional, but at this point in time, it so happens that I work for the people of Zambia through within the office of the president as a special advisor for finance and investment. And of course, my mandate within that office is to support the president's vision in aligning the economic ministries to ensure that there's investments, investments that creates jobs, that improves people's lives. Because the core of who I am as a person is somebody who wants to see his society work so much better. For me, and I'll touch on a story I've told countless occasions, which I think is important to mention, is the element that triggered, the most memorable element of empathy that guided the sort of decisions I made around what career I should pursue and how I live my life.
Right.
And it's that of noticing, you know, the levels of poverty that have existed in our society for many years. As a child, I saw the stark reality, the distinction, the differences, the disparity between those who have and those who don't have.
Right.
As I was being driven to school, I used to see children around my age also going to school. But they were walking, they were in tattered clothing.
Right.
That always triggered a great sense of guilt and a great sense of awareness of there's something wrong here.
Yeah.
That this condition that, you know, I'm fortunate by virtue of luck. You know, no one chooses their parents. No one chooses the condition that they're born into. And the same is true for them. But I want to be part of the reason that their lives are better one day.
Right.
Whether it be by way of my profession. Being an investment professional means I can direct capital into an environment that absorbs jobs, that creates a standard of living that delivers a better life. So they can have cleaner clothing. They can go to a better school. They can perhaps move in a manner that is more dignified. To me, that makes up the core of who I am professionally.
Right.
That no matter what I do, whether it be driving investments, whether it be in mining, in energy, in whatever the case, it's at the end of the day, it's about social impact. It's how much is a person's life improving, the quality of a person's life. And for me, that Ubuntu nature, and I'll wrap up the answer to your question, is appreciating the circumstances of another human being.
There we go.
That I am because you are. And if you are not okay, it should cause me to be uncomfortable because we're interconnected. The lack of stability of another person's life always affects the stability of another. And that as a society, we have to have that awareness and work together to see how we can improve things. And I'll then go back to ask that person on that same flight and say, how about you? How can you help me make the world a better place? What do you do? And how can we tie into this vision of improving our social environment?
Right.
Because I want to create community around improving our society. And that ultimately is how I would, you know, respond.
Oh, brilliant. Now that would have them saying, I'm definitely sitting next to a thinker over here. When you're on a flight, staying on the theme of aircraft, what do you normally do? Long haul flight. Obviously, there are many instances where you're working in readiness for your arrival.
Yes.
But when it's a flight where all the work is sorted and you're covered, what's your go-to play?
You know, something that I hardly get enough of is actually rest. So I do try to sleep.
Okay.
That's the first. It obviously shortens the trip because if you're asleep, then...
you don't feel the distance. Exactly.
So that's the first. But the second is I love to read. I'm a big believer that, you know, in life, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are people who've lived lives of great achievement, of who've created so much value. And you can learn from them. You can avoid certain mistakes. And not repeat them by understanding how did the founder of Lamborghini sort of what was, you know, his process. How did Andrew Carnegie work? Because I'm a big fan of Andrew Carnegie. You know, how did, you know, Tom, you know, no, not as Henry, as I was going to say Tom Ford, that's the fashion
one. No. Henry Ford. Are we getting a little hint on your favorite cologne?
No. How did Henry Ford, what was his work ethic? What were his values? I look at, of course, not only reading on political leaders like Lee Kuan Yew, people who shape societies, business leaders are people I'm most drawn to. You know, Warren Buffett is phenomenal, Ray Dalio. So I read about them and understanding the practicality of, you know, of course, the philosophy is important. The how to, the general picture of how certain things are done. But for me, it's about how is this applicable in my life?
Exactly.
And how do I internalize it? So that when you meet me or you meet me on the streets, you see me, you see the how to say, the amalgamation, the coming together of all the knowledge that I'm drawing in, and it's being put together. And this is why the concept of Drip University came about. It's getting and I'll tell you this, the greatest privilege I believe any person can have in life is to have access to knowledge. Because knowledge does, you know, empower, it differentiates you, it does, you know, enable you to do things and
stuff. Definitely.
Exactly. And you can create enormous value and you can create enormous success. So I use social media as an environment to mentor, because I get people asking me questions all the time. Can you be my mentor? And so on and so forth.
Wow.
So the whole concept is free knowledge.
Yeah.
Anyone can access it. You choose to apply it or not.
Exactly.
And that's really ultimately what it is. And that's the combination of how I access information and how I share it.
Oh, brilliant. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that people don't like vacuums.
Yes.
So what they don't know, they sort of create their own images in their mind. And sometimes these misconceptions come to our attention. Like, whoa, is that what they think about me?
Yeah.
What's the craziest misconception about yourself that you've heard?
I think I've heard stories like some people who don't know me personally think maybe a bit arrogant. I consider myself very confident, deliberately so, because I've grown up being a very shy person. When I was in school, I was not the most confident. I was very shy. I was the guy who, if I had a crush on a girl, I was less likely to approach her. I would just sort of, you know, have that feeling, stay with it. You know, that's the person I was. But I actively tried to change that deliberately by associating with people who would give me that skill set, if you will. What other misconception? I think there's another huge, huge misconception that I really, really had it easy in my life. I think, so first and foremost, I'm a big believer that if you have it too easy, your chances of being successful are very low.
True.
Because nothing makes you weaker than having a soft life.
Yeah.
Yes, I had the privilege of going to very good schools. Like I said earlier about, you know, being somebody who was being driven to school, clean clothing, and I noticed the difference between somebody who doesn't have and me who has. That's definitely something to point out. But it's the assumption that certain things just fell in my lap. The
silver spoon.
Exactly. The development of the company that I was privileged to be a partner in.
Right.
You know, the manner in which I acquired my current occupation, the manner in which certain successes that I achieved came about, whether it be sitting on the Airtel board or Zambia Breweries, things of that nature. People don't see the how do I say, people see the surface. You know, it's like there's an image of an iceberg.
An iceberg, yes.
They see the top, but don't see that beneath that, there's so much more. And that in order to attain certain things, you have to endure certain, sometimes struggles.
Yeah.
And I've had my fair share of exposure to a lot of difficulties in my life, which I'm sure I'll get into at some stage. But I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about me. And I think over time, and fortunately through my interactions with people, I think that is sort of kind of moving away.
It's being fixed.
and the other reality, I must say, and this is in the world of malice, if you will, when you're in the public eye, you're going to have a lot of people saying falsehoods. Deliberately, in order to bring you down.
Exactly.
It just comes with it. So you have to be strong mentally. And some things are done deliberately to do so.
Yeah.
I don't try to fight back that because it's a waste of energy. I think for me, what matters most is truth. I think truth is always going to carry the day.
Yeah.
And any lie will run fast. It will go viral.
Yeah.
But it will die.
It dies. And it has no roots.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned something very, very critical. And I think we'll spring off of that.
Sure.
You say you noticed that there were people who were in dire straits and going through difficult times. and that shaped you and sort of shaped the direction that you took. Sure. What else in your childhood was like that aha moment that gave you direction and made you say, you know what, I want to do something about this?
So a couple of things happened, and some of this stuff is quite personal, but I'll share a bit of it anyway. So
as far as you're comfortable.
That's fine. I appreciate that. I think, you know, some things it's important for people to understand because it's part of the fabric of who I am. So when I was very, very young, so my parents split when I was about maybe 3 or 4. I was very young when that happened.
Mm.
So I never really saw myself as being, let me put it this way, and I'll qualify this. I've left a sentence hanging, but I'll pick it up. So when they split, I moved to live with my grandmother in Indola.
Right.
So I lived there with extended family. With you know, uncles, aunts, cousins, you name it. So it was a very interesting childhood within that environment. Yeah. So, and that was very important for me because it helped me appreciate another side. Because I mean, I was born in Osaka,
right?
So of course, spending time there within the extended family setting meant a lot of different things, but definitely rooted me more in the community over there. And I would say over time, with what I got to see, because I used to interact with people from all walks of life. As a kid, I played. It didn't matter who you were, whether you're a child of a wealthy person,
right,
or the child of the maid,
right.
They were my friends, and I think that's my sense of that every human being should be treated equally and fairly has always been there. And and my grandmother's a huge force in my life. She was deeply, Christian. And that definitely was my first exposure into faith.
Right.
So that really strengthened my own outlook on faith.
Right.
And she used to host a lot of people, people studying priesthood and so on would come and live with us. So and she had a nursery school as well. So she was an educator. So
yeah, a people person.
Absolutely. So those are things that I'd say were very important in shaping me. But something else I think that made me feel peculiar and very awkward, I didn't feel very normal, is that because I was not living with my parents, and I'll go to school and I'll see parents being picked up by both parents, I used to wonder, like, how come that is really nice. I want to have that. It made me believe so much in the importance of family, the importance of a nuclear family where, you know, parents are together and, you know, the children are growing in that sort of condition, which is ultimately what God wants, you know. God's wisdom and word is that a man, woman come together, have children, create family, and so on. And that's something I saw. Okay, that's an ideal. I need to develop a life that goes for that. And that was important because it just made me so aware. And I feel like in life, it's also important to know your inadequacies, because your inadequacies make you work hard to try to fill that gap and to not view the world too negatively. And I think that was key. Another very important I'd say inflection point. Yes, I talked about my observing, you know, the disparity between those who have and those who don't. Of course, I talked about my faith, my living in the Copper Belt. It's also at a critical time when I decided at a very young age, now this is in my 20s, to basically leave home to live on my own. Yes.
It's not a very Zambian thing to do,
It's not. Especially that, you know, I know the reasonable trappings of how a decent home should be. But I made a decision. It was a very personal decision. It was a tough one because, one, I've always been a very ambitious person. I wanted to work hard to achieve certain things. The circumstances I was in, living at home, didn't feel conducive for that I needed to have the freedom of charting my way. And I literally started with almost nothing. And, you know, spending nights at a friend's sort of little place in Kawata to then finding my place, to borrowing a mattress. I didn't have any furniture, I remember, you know, struggling to find money to pay rent. All those difficulties were very shaping for me, which is very important, you know, for me to have exposure, to understand that, you know what, to live a life where you're not sure whether money for rent will come from, that nervousness, that when that phone rings because it's your landlord waiting, that's an important feeling to experience on your journey towards, even when you do become successful, you have a greater degree of respect, not only for money, but also for people who are in those circumstances, so you can help them better.
That's right.
I'm not coming from a position of, I don't know your circumstance, so therefore,
I'm oblivious of what you're going through,
exactly.
But you're relatable. So you can relate to any person who's had circumstances similar to those.
Absolutely.
And that's a very humanizing side of things.
Yeah.
And so as a young person, you mentioned you were ambitious and you're also very self-aware. You realized where your weaknesses were. But would you say you were an early or late bloomer?
Definitely a late bloomer.
Yeah.
Because, and I'll be first to admit this, I was not even a great student when I was at school.
Really?
Yeah. I was, you know, an average.
No.
Things happened, things shaped later because I was still discovering myself, you know. My mindset was, okay, to some extent, I was actually a bit naughty.
And
a little too naughty.
I find that a bit hard to believe.
No, it's a vibe.
Very composed.
By the grace of God,
yeah.
I found myself in my young adulthood.
Yeah.
But the reality is I had to go through a refining process.
Right.
You know, being highly imperfect, being somebody who not only did not achieve the best grades, even socially, I was a bit awkward, right? Like I talked about how I'll compare myself with my friends.
Mm.
My friends, you know, like I talked about family circumstances. I knew I was a bit different.
Yes.
So I needed to observe, to learn how to be, you know, perhaps more, you know, in high school, one of the things you want to be is cool.
Right.
You want to be the cool kid.
Street cred.
Exactly. Yeah,
the guy that everybody wants to be and the guy who all the girls want to be with.
Exactly. And the reality is I wasn't. But over time, because I knew I was shy, I did not, you know, have the best, how do I say, the ease of connecting with people at the early stage. I'm the firstborn, so I didn't have anyone to learn from.
Oof.
Of course, I had extended family and so on.
Mm.
But it's, so I, because of the desire to fit in, the desire to be, to have significance, it actually made me overachieve.
Right.
Because I'm now watching to say, okay, that guy who all the girls like, this is how he behaves.
I want to be that guy.
Exactly. So I get a bit of that. I was a sponge for information.
Right.
The kid who gets the best grades, this is how she behaves.
Mm.
The one who has this. And then over time, I adjusted quite significantly. And I think it led me to believe in truly the science of achievement, that anyone can actually become successful. And I will admit that I'm nothing special. I'm not... If anyone truly applies themselves, they can be successful.
Right.
But nothing differentiates me in a big way, apart from the desire to actually pursue a degree of success by being attentive, by being positive. Because I think that's the one element which I believe does really shape a person, is that you could actually submit to your negative circumstances and say, you know, I'd always be like this. This is how God made me.
It is what it is.
Or you can say, you know what? I can be better. You know, I could, if I show up, people will be inspired. People, I'll be able to get that contract, get that deal, get that girl, you know. And by the grace of God, it happened because of time and application, bit of difficulty, bit of struggle. But that same degree of focus did definitely. And quite frankly, I bloomed eventually.
So you're definitely a firm believer in the philosophy of earned and not given.
Yes. You have to earn, because easy come, easy go. You get given, you lose it very quickly.
Yeah.
I knew so many people growing up who, in fact, most of the cool kids who were intrinsically cool, later in life, it doesn't stay that way.
No.
Sadly.
No.
But the ones, it's the nerds. It's the ones who have the awkwardness, who eventually, because they're always yearning to be better, they're fighting to because they know that there's effort that's required in order for them to even appear normal.
Exactly.
And what they end up having, they end up overachieving.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what happens. So in terms of even being able to perfect, I mean, I was not a good public speaker. I was not I'll be the guy who I can't stand in front of the class and speak. But now people, when they see me speak in public, I think it comes naturally.
Yes.
It's years of practice.
You've worked at it, Absolutely. There's someone who was talking to a group of young people, students, and told them, look around you. Who's the nerdiest guy in class? And you know, the cool kids are laughing. Hey, it's so-and-so.
Yeah.
So be nice to him. He's probably going to be your boss in about 20 years.
I have no doubt about that.
It's a recurring theme. It's a recurring theme. Yeah. Be nice to nerds.
Yes.
So you ventured out to go and live on your own.
Yeah.
And then you took that up several notches. I mean, it's one thing to move out of home and live on your own, or move from one city to another, but you went off and literally transposed yourself into another country.
Sure.
You moved to Canada for your studies.
That's right.
And it's not just Canada over here. You went to Quebec.
That's right.
So there were language issues at play as well.
Yeah.
How was your adaptation process there?
It was very difficult. My first year, I must say, if I can ever say that I've had any exposure with even a degree of depression, that was the time.
Really?
Because, yeah, I was about 18. The cultural differences were so big that there I had, in fact, I'll be specific, the first year, one, it was very cold. We're talking
Canada. Canada's not, it's living in a fridge, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So number one, struggling to fit in, to, you know, build community, to have friends, that I felt very lonely, very isolated. But then again, I did exactly what I did as a young person, is that I began to observe, how does society work?
Yeah.
That society won't change for me. I have to change to fit into the society.
Adapt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what happened in year two was now where you can say, like, okay. That's why I always tell people, and it's not mumbo jumbo motivational speak. This is reality.
Right.
That if you apply yourself, you can achieve and you can overachieve
and
become the exact opposite of what it was. So going from being shy, reclusive, you know, lonely, all those negative things. Of course, studies were happening at the same time. I started to build community, started to follow those who were successful, started to find mentors actively, started to really positively engage people. I created an incredible community of friends. I started to do very exciting things. School was, you know, started to, you know, excel, you know, from a studies perspective. I started to do extracurricular activities. I even became the president of the African Students Association at Concordia. I started to host events that were to essentially empower the African diaspora with knowledge.
Right.
I had everything from poetry events. I was the guy on campus. You know,
full bloom.
Completely. So that to me tells you something about, not just about me, but about anybody out there who might be in a situation that is not very positive. That take time, be perspicacious. Take time to observe what is happening around you and how can you be a relevant person of value that makes a difference in your community. There are huge gaps of, you know, particularly young Black leadership, because imagine I'm there as an African, as a minority. So you do face things, there's racism, those things.
Oh, yes.
But you can over, how do I say, you can rise above that through excellence.
Right.
I'm a big believer in, if you become good at something, hone that craft and utilize it to essentially, of course, share it, be proud of it.
Yes.
It will draw people in. It will, and I can tell you, it had an incredible time. You know, after graduation, I started working in an investment firm. That's when that was my first exposure into investments. And I knew the power of connections.
Right.
That it's not enough to just be knowledgeable. You can have a degree. These days, everybody has a degree. But what differentiates you, on not just on paper, but in terms of your character?
Yes.
Because I was so well networked. People saw me speak on stage. They saw my reflections on certain things. And they saw the resourceful nature in which I was able to work in terms of mobilizing resources, creating interesting things, events and the like. And all of that ultimately put me in a situation where I was quite attractive for the job market.
Yes.
You know, because people like that shining example. Say, let's hire that guy.
Exactly.
Because we see
exactly.
And even before social media was a thing, I was quite, you know, robust. Those days we used to use MSN Messenger, there was high five. Things are moved.
You're showing your age,
I'm a value. People think I'm that young, not that young. So that's what it is, right? So,
Oh, wow. And you've mentioned something very key, and I think it's a lesson that a lot of young people miss out on.
Mm.
Like, I've got the grades. How come nobody wants to hire me? But you're obnoxious, eh?
Yes.
Yeah, like, you don't get along with people. You don't make an effort to try and make your team better. Mm. It's me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lesson that is valuable to a person with the qualifications, and to the qualifications and character.
Yes.
And that'll hold you in good stead.
Absolutely.
Now, if we were to access a time machine and be able to take you back to your university days, what one thing would you want to do differently?
Wow. I've never been asked that before. That's a very good question. I would say that I would maintain the sense of wonder and optimism that things can be better.
Right.
And I would reassure myself that I know you don't like your circumstances, because when I was in university, I used to take these funny odd jobs to make a bit of extra money.
Right.
If I wanted to buy a new pair of sneakers, I used to work in a nightclub as a dishwasher.
Oh, yeah.
I've done that before.
Earned.
You know, yeah, I'm moving a friend of mine, because as a international student, you couldn't actually, now I'm going to expose something. Please, no one should.
Don't hold this against you. Yeah.
I used to work under the table, which is basically you work for cash.
Right.
Because I could not be on payroll because of being international.
You were on a student visa.
Exactly.
Yes. And with no recourse to funds. And yeah, we know the drill.
So I would work and, you know, get paid cash. Because those are the jobs you could do. Because, you know, the local people are not really that.
No, they don't want to do those jobs.
Yeah. So, or if there's furniture being moved, I'd be one of the guys hired to sort of, you know, move
the truck. And all. Yeah.
Absolutely. But at the same time, I was studying and finding myself really steeped in the understanding of not only the science associated with you know, public policy, you know, economics, foreign affairs, all those aspects that were you know, encompassed my program. But I would again go back to say that your life is that you should have hope and maintain your optimism.
Yeah.
Because with everything you're doing, every effort is not never going to be wasted. That even when you fail, your lesson is what will make you better next time.
Right.
And that every effort that you make is actually making you stronger and preparing you for life that when you go back home, you'll be able to effectively apply yourself and you will find success. It will be just to confirm that you're on the right track. Just keep at it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't take anything personally.
Yeah.
Be strong. You know, read more, go to the gym, have a good mindset. Those are the type of things. So in all honesty, I wouldn't want to really change anything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So that helped form who you are now.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so you went in for a major in political science and had a minor in resourcefulness as well.
Definitely. I had to understand how do you get things going.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's stuff you don't even learn at school. Getting mentors, you know, how do you set up a business? How do you build networks? Because people, and you know, we've got a sad notion in our country where people think, you know, having connections is a bad thing. It's almost seen to be illegal.
Mm.
But you have to be deliberate about creating connections. Yeah. And anyone can do it.
Yeah.
And those connections do help you move along in life.
True.
Because I know people who've raised capital because of connections. I know people who've gotten jobs because of connections.
Mm.
It doesn't necessarily mean that the connections means that you're not qualified.
No. You can do the job.
Exactly. Yeah. Because if you don't know your stuff, then you'll get there. They say who you know will get you there, but what you know is what keeps you there. You'll get there, but you'll fall. So you have to be deliberate in building those networks. And that's one of the key fundamental elements that I certainly learned.
That was pretty deep right there. And so your journey was an interesting one. Political science and then into finance. And finance is where your passion really came through.
Absolutely.
If you were not doing finance, what would you be doing?
I'd be a teacher.
Really?
Yeah, because I love teaching. I love young people. And I'll tell you, and that's why the answer is so easy. It's because I believe that I want to be part of shaping a society. And the most important capital, of course, I've dealt with capital in my life, financial capital, that you know makes businesses work.
Exactly.
But human capital is very important. And I'm a big believer in what Frederick Douglass says, that it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. Now, if you have a society where things have not gone very well, instead of, in fact, let me change, rephrase what I was going through my mind. I would focus on getting young people at a very early age, start molding them to develop the society that you actually want. Because there's some things today that are a combination of things that we should have done in terms of investing in young people.
The building blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to tell that kid to say, you can actually make the next Dubai right here in Zambia. And this is how you do it. Mm. This is how you organize yourselves, not only from a business standpoint, but from a mentality standpoint, from a cultural standpoint.
Right.
And I would, and I love teaching. And there are times I've lectured at, you know, UNSA, at UNILAS.
Yes.
I've lectured in many different places. Mostly for free, for fun,
yeah, well,
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I continue to, this is why the whole concept of Drip University is there, because it's part of my, it's my passion to teach.
Right.
Because again, my privilege of knowledge based on my own curiosity, because I maintain a constant curiosity, I can't just keep that to myself. I need to give. And that's my part of my purpose in life, is to be able to share with the world what can make the world a better place, what can make my community a better community.
Right.
On weekends, I do masterclasses. Even on the side of the road, I can be in Kanyama, I could be in Chainda.
I've seen those on your socials, and you've got marketeers sitting and you're asking them key questions about how much they make on a daily basis, how they reinvest that. And have there been people who've said, hey, listen, I listened to what you said and I've applied it and I was there and here's where I'm going now and here's where I want to get?
Absolutely. That happens a lot. I bump into people and say, and it inspires me to continue to share on social media, where people pop, you know, they run into me at the airport, say, you know what, that post where you said this and this, I went and applied that and it worked.
Right.
You know, whether it be guiding someone how to access capital, improving someone's financial literacy, improving someone's strategic mind in their business. So effectively, I'm already a teacher, right? It's just that I don't get paid for it. And it's not even in my job description.
Nah, right? But that passion just gushes out.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's my answer. That's what I would be doing if I was not doing what I'm doing right now.
Amazing. Now, what you're actually doing is going off and giving advice to the head of state and his entire team. And you've had the privilege, and it's a minuscule percentage of people who've had this privilege of being able to sit at the table while negotiations are underway. Sure. And finally, that handshake seals the deal.
Yeah.
And something comes to mind, not too long ago, $1.25 billion investment in the mining sector.
That's right.
And all we get to see is, oh, okay, there's a press release and we see the news piece. What goes on behind the scenes? I mean, how much hard work goes into making that happen?
It's extraordinary. And I appreciate you asking that question, because that is a big driver for me, because that's the role I play to a large, or at least I played together with many other competent people within government and really with the guidance of the president. Right. And for me, one of the biggest honors of my life is to be a mentee and of course, somebody who is associated with this president, you know, Hakainde Hichilema, being somebody who's phenomenal within his own right as an investment professional, somebody who understands negotiations and the like. Now, to answer your question on my participation and what goes on, firstly, you need to create linkages. You need to be familiar with one another. People underestimate the importance of building that relationship. So you have to, first and foremost, go to where the investors are. When people, you hear narratives, the president and the team are traveling and the like, they don't realize that if you don't go to where the investors are, the investors will take their money elsewhere. So we began by looking for them, finding ways in which we can get to, you know, show Zambia as a premier investment destination. So it starts from, you know, and here's a point I'll make. You have to remember, when we came in 2021, because I was fortunate to, and you know, I've had the honor of being, you know, coming to this office on the 15th of September 2021. That's, we were just new, right?
And brand new. Yeah.
Then you discover, first of all, what the situation is, the debt situation.
Right.
Like, okay, but all this debt, how are you going to invest? How to convince an investor to invest in Zambia with all this debt.
Right.
You have to restructure, you have to do all these things. So now behind the scenes, you're making calls, you're making these visitations, you're having meetings, and they're busy telling you, your country is a mess. I said, no, we've just inherited this. We've got all this debt. Our fiscal space is very limited. The prospect for economic growth is very low because we were shrinking as an economy.
Right.
Minus 2.8% in terms of economic decline. And you know, all these factors were in place. So now you have to, you know, it's easier now to sell Zambia as an investment destination than it was back then.
Right.
Because now you have to show that, look at the character of this new leader who's coming. So that's the first phase. The second is now the follow-ups, because you have to build trust, build confidence.
Yep.
Then you package the transactions.
Right.
You look at all the mines that had died, Mopani, KCM, Luansha, this thing. So now you have to revive, because those are, were the biggest contributors to our economy. This economy depends so much on mining, and rightfully so. Mining created Zambia. Zambia would not exist if it weren't
without that copper strip we have on our flag.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It would never have been. So So the reality is we need to find a way to enhance the sector. This is why the vision to get production to 3 million was done,
essentially
put across, and is well on course. Now, we began by not only engaging, but went on platforms like the Mining Indaba to let the world know
that
we are here, we are going to succeed. And I can tell you, we've attracted over $11 billion in the mining sector. $1.1 billion in Mopani. There's $1 billion or so coming in KCM. There's over $1.6 billion going to CNMC.
Mm.
We're talking Lusha Mine, all the mines associated there. $2 billion going to Barrick. $1.3 billion going to the FQM system. We've, you know, developing the largest nickel mine on the continent, expanding existing mines, launching new mines. There's an American entity called Cobalt.
Cobalt.
We're investing
in
Chilawombwe. So the point is, behind the scenes, you steer, first of all, you structure policy so that it's more attractive. You build confidence. You show that you have the platform for investment.
Right.
And you commit time and capital. We're also doing prospecting ourselves. We're doing mapping in order to bring in more investment.
Right.
And the numbers speak for themselves. You ask anyone in the Copper Belt today that after the investment, for example, in Mopani, what is happening? In fact, there's minor. I don't look at indicators. It's not enough to say, oh, the GDP has moved like this.
No.
It's about the kid in Kitwe.
Exactly.
Like different.
Exactly.
The kid who can now work at the mine. The mother who's selling tomatoes, who's selling more tomatoes because the 1,700 people who've been employed by Mopani are making a salary to go and buy groceries.
They can afford to.
Yeah, people are telling me back then, people wouldn't be walking out of ShopRite with two bags, but now they do.
There we go.
The Garden Court Hotel is full all the time. Restaurants are full. Why? Because there's money now moving circulation.
Right.
There's so much more that can be done. That I can tell you. Mm. But the reality is, there's, you know, the work speaks for itself.
Mm.
And part of our job is to show that. And the videos that you may see me do are the videos that point out that this is the X billion dollar investment. This is the impact.
Right.
And this is for you to appreciate that the value this will add to our economy is unbelievable. That's why I'm so optimistic about the future of our country.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you've benefited. You mentioned the very, very key component of being able to be mentored by those who know better than you.
Yes.
Obviously, it's not possible that all the advice that you've received over the years has been good. What's the worst financial advice you've received in your life? Please do not tell us who gave it to you. Let's protect them.
Now I'm going to say it. I've got this friend called Joe. Right?
Joe. There's always a Joe.
No, but I need to say something. Joe's, when I was leaving home in 2010? When I was, basically setting out my, he actually hosted me. I lived at his house for a few days. And it's his brother who lent me my mattress for a few months before I got a fortune.
The famous mattress.
Stinky mattress. So Joe once said, Chito, you like saving too much. Every little money you make, you save.
Yeah.
What if you died tomorrow? You'd have not enjoyed. Thank God I didn't listen to Joe's advice. I told him, Joe, but what if I do live longer? Then I have nothing to invest tomorrow. I will continue to save no matter how little, even if it's 10 kwacha per month or per whenever I have anything. So that was the worst advice. And I can tell people out there that you have to have a mindset, regardless of how little one makes, is to put aside something. Mm. Because there's always something aside you can, there's always a sacrifice you can make. I know people who tell me, no, I don't make enough money, I can't save. But I saw you drinking Mosi.
Mm.
Where did the money for Mosi come from? You can sacrifice that.
You can afford to put away something.
Nothing against Mosi. I love Mosi. I love Zaki Bruce. But that's just an example.
Exactly.
But I should have said another beer. But anyway,
it'll be a very interesting conversation at the next board meeting.
I know. I'm sure. I love Mosi. It's the best.
So if you could change one thing about how business is done in Zambia, what would it be?
Now, this one, I could go on forever, but let me just make it as concise as possible.
Yep.
Number one, we need to have a better business planning mindset. Let me explain what I mean by that. Many people like to hire other people to do their business plan. Don't do that. If you're the one who's going to run the business, do not subcontract the design of your business.
Yeah.
Design it by doing the work, get into the field, understand how the system works, understand your product, how much it costs to develop your product, how much you should sell it for, so you know your margin, understand who your market is, and how you connect with that market and what activities you need to put in place to make your business work. That is, those are the fundamentals of business.
Right.
So that's something that I feel is lost, because whenever I ask people, what do you need to make your business better? I need capital. That's all.
Yep.
I'm like, but you've not even told me how much. And I always tell people, if you're afraid to say the number will be afraid of you. So you have to have an intimate relationship with your business and with the needs that will make your business work. The second is you need to have a mindset to pay back. The default rates are very high.
Yeah.
People borrow, but they don't want to pay back. If you pay back, you have the credibility to borrow more later.
Right.
And you continue. The biggest companies in this country survive and grow because they continue to borrow all the time.
Right.
And the banks trust them because their credit rating is high, because they always pay back.
Right.
That's a very important element. The third is manage your expenditure. Because you're making more money, doesn't mean you should, what we do, there's a term called lifestyle inflation.
Mm.
Because I've made X more, I can buy a better car. I'll buy a Benz now.
They must see me.
Let's get disciplined. Let's put aside more money that essentially will be available to invest even more so that we can be competitive. Because the reality is, particularly, and I'll be very blunt about this, among Black Zambians, we don't have a significant role within the economy, right? Mm. And this has been the case from literally time immemorial, right? Nothing against citizens of other persuasions.
Right.
We love them.
Right.
But the reality is we get dominated by other groupings who run various industries, from banks to manufacturing to you name it.
Right.
Because one, they work better together. This is something we need to learn to do, is we support each other.
Yeah.
We leverage, because if I don't trust that you pay me back, I'm not going to give you money again.
No.
So as a community, we need to invest in each other,
build
each other up, and build that trust. It eventually gets, you know, us to be more resilient. We manage our costs. We focus on delivering value. And let's not get too relaxed when we get successful. I've seen people who, when they start to make a certain amount of money, they start to relax, they go on more vacations.
Yep.
We want a better life. But I'd rather start planning for two generations or even for my grandkids, you know, God willing, I have grandkids.
There we go.
In the future. And think about what platform, what capital base I can create for them, as opposed to, because that BIM I'm targeting today might take away capital for the next generation.
Correct.
So we have to have that mindset of being much more financially, fiscally disciplined.
Hmm.
That's very important. Those are, I would say, are the key elements. And the other really is, let's put pressure. Let me tell you a secret about what I've learned about my office in terms of the mindset of Zambians versus foreigners.
Right.
Whenever I get a call from a Zambian entrepreneur, you find that, one, there's a lot of respect, and I love that, and I appreciate it. It's a beautiful culture.
Right.
But it takes away some fundamental elements, because people are so overwhelmed with the perception that, oh, I'm talking to a senior government official, so therefore I need to dance around.
Exactly.
Like, no.
I must be subservient.
Do not be subservient. Come with a degree of passion, with a degree of, with a strong will to say, Mr. Kayumba, my name is John. The reason I need to talk to you is I need this. Be very specific. Go for it. I come from this village and, you know, my father died at this age. I'm like, the sympathy narrative,
it
might help you for a moment, but it is not a strategy to maintain in the long run to grow.
No.
Come with the value proposition that is realistic, that is ultimately that's going to build you up. And really, the difference again, and so I've used a couple of examples. One is the way we operate.
That's right.
The amount of respect. But the second is the way others come through with almost a sense of entitlement in a positive way, where they call me with a clear intention. And you know, and I appreciate confidence. I always tell people that whenever you call anyone, don't think that I'm too important or a minister or somebody in any office, a CEO.
Right.
If you want, don't make me the reason that your dreams are accomplished, that I am just a stepping stone for you to achieve what you want to achieve.
Right.
See me as literally that. So, and that's my advice to Zambians out there, is that just go for it. Have an attitude. Be aggressive.
Yes.
And that's something that we get left behind. Because I can tell you, others are succeeding in big ways.
Yeah.
And I see it and it disappoints me.
Yeah.
And that's my advice.
And so someday, when you look back on this chapter of your life, I know it's still being written, but if for some reason we said, Okay, as we stand today, what would you look at and look back on in what you've done in the last 4 or 5 years with the most pride?
I would say I would always count the number of lives I changed. And to me, that's the key. And it's not about me as an I. Yes, I'm part of a team, government. But in my personal capacity, if I'm participating in a negotiation that delivers an investment that brings in $1 billion, I'll count the jobs. And I'll count how many people that person is helping in that community. I'll count literally the improvement of that person's life, because I spend time with many of these people. I'll look at the number of people we've empowered through CDF, through CEC. Not everyone has access, but more people have access than ever before. I'd count the number of people who've come out of poverty, whose lives have improved.
Right.
I'd look at some of the extracurricular activities I've been involved in, you know, supporting, because I know that one of the biggest pastimes for Zambians is football.
Right.
I look at the community, and I must say, I have truly, deeply fallen in love with people really within the lowest areas of our society, you know, people living within impoverished communities, because I see so much hope. I see a spirit that is pure, that is good, that desires a better life. And I want to continue to be a bridge to give them that hope and show them how they can leverage on their own skill sets, but also give them added skill sets that takes them, you know, to a better life. So to channel facilities to them is key, and to count that, to say, in this community, X number of people became football players. I mean, I'm talking to, you know, football teams in Europe to come and train them. And, you know, whether it be, you know, arranging for facilities for orphans, to me, that is the biggest thing. People want to talk about GDP growth. I will talk about that. Hey, when we came in, GDP was at X. Now it is at this level.
Right.
We're going to double the economy. There's no doubt by the time we're done. We're going to get people out of poverty. We're going to create jobs. I will look back at that as being the value that I created for my country in collaboration with many others.
Right.
And it's very clear, very specific. I don't want to overinflate, you know, the expectations. I want to be clear. And that in order to create a job, you need to direct capital in a certain area.
Right.
You need to be strategic.
Right.
You need to, you know, be deliberate. And these are things that I will continue to do. And like you said, the story is still being written.
Right.
And my hope, my prayer, is to not only impact people financially and improve their lives, but also up here. If somebody, whether it be watching this podcast or seeing me on other platforms, are able to change their lives, even without having that added capital that they're looking for, but literally in the way they show up at that job interview, the way they show up at the bank when seeking a loan, the way they carry themselves, the difference that makes, to me, I would have been a very happy man. And my goal is to be an ancestor in the future.
There we go. There was that man.
Yes. That guy is better because I spend time with him. That lady there is doing more in her community because I was able to inspire her to do that. So there's so much more that can be said, but ultimately, that's what I want to be remembered for.
Very anecdotal. Now, we're probably circling the airport now and getting ready to land this. So let's go a bit personal.
Sure.
Now, you've highlighted, and it is a well-known fact, that you are a financial expert.
That's right.
And also big on self-improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having brought that out as the face that we see, are you under any pressure to you yourself live out your expertise?
So firstly, I'm definitely want to share more. I'm definitely going to write.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
I'm definitely going to do, especially, and I look at my job as being very temporary because governments come and go.
That's right.
And the reality is, and I will move on into business. I mean, I love business. I will do things internationally. I will no doubt lecture at universities internationally.
Yep.
I will have be on speaking circuits. There's no doubt about that. I will have a pan-African approach. I believe in Africa really as a, you know, a beautiful continent that can do better if we work better together. We trade more amongst each other.
Right.
Zambia is obviously a very key part of Africa, being so strategically located.
Right.
So living out what I'm saying, it's because I, in fact, if anything, I'm the first consequence of the exact things I share.
Right.
In fact, if anything, I speak with more confidence and more determination, if you will.
Right.
Because before, there's some things I used to say that I've not even achieved yet. But now that, you know, reality has brought me into exactly where I'm at, and I thank God wholeheartedly for that, I can now tell someone and say, no, I've actually walked these steps.
Right.
Before I was telling my all my friends, hey, save, be confident, be this, be that. Yeah. I'm like, but you haven't achieved anything. What are you talking about?
It was the theory then.
But now those same friends are coming back. Because, what did you tell us?
Right.
Exactly. So in essence, I'm my first student. When I'm learning, I'm teaching myself, I'm applying and hoping that others also apply the same. So that's how I would say I live out what I'm doing.
Right.
I apply it. And I myself, I give so much of myself, not just in terms of time, but in terms of resources.
Right.
I believe I've got a cap on what makes me satisfied.
Right.
If I have enough to take care of my family, I know my number. Anything beyond that is forgiving other people.
Yeah.
And I want to create value and create wealth in a genuine way, but wealth that accrues to other people to improve their lives.
Right.
And that's to me, hopefully, I'm answering your question.
No, you're totally on point. Sure. And I think that's you literally answered it by highlighting that you don't preach anything that you wouldn't practice yourself.
Absolutely.
So your faith has to become sight.
Absolutely.
And with people, you say, hey, I did this, I walked the path.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the pressure that a lot of people feel because it's all talk and it sounds good. It's like, okay, but where do we see this?
You need evidence.
Exactly.
Exactly. Sure.
Like it works.
Yes.
Yeah.
I need to mention something before you ask your next question, which is, I think, something that is always on my heart, which I always have to share,
right,
is the fact that I am completely useless without God.
Oh.
That every little thing that I do,
there's
prayer involved.
Right.
There's seeking God. I would have never been anywhere close to where I'm at, whether it be by effort, by you name it, if it weren't for, my recognition of God's place in my life,
right,
by God's grace, by obedience. And I continue to rely on that. And even more now, and being in the public eye, being working with the president, being working in State House, has made me become a person even deeper rooted in my faith.
Right.
Because it has exposed me so much more. And I feel much more as a servant. And because I've always been afraid of the fact that many people who go and work in places like where I work, they do become arrogant and they do become detached. I went and did the exact opposite. And I was condemned for it. Oh, you're not supposed to be in the media. You're not supposed to be interacting.
You shouldn't be so sociable.
I'm like, those are my employers.
Yeah.
When they pay the tax, they pay my salary. So you want me to avoid them? No. But fortunately, I think it is somewhat, people become accustomed to it and accepted that, okay, fine. We didn't like you doing it, but you're doing it. But the spirit behind me doing it is a spirit of service, a spirit of love for my country and my community, and that I will never be a satisfied person if suffering is a very dominant thing in people's lives, and that I have to play a part. Of course, we can't solve every problem, that we're just but a piece of history.
Right.
And for the time I have, I'll do my best. And I want to be that person who sort of rides out into the sunset with pride and says, yes, I'm thankful God that I had this privilege of serving the people, serving the public, and that God was always my guide, my compass, kept me grounded, and that whoever comes after us, whether it be all of us as a team later, whenever that time comes, that we will be there to support them, to serve the country even better than we can. Because at the end of the day, it's about Zambia. Mm-hmm. It's about making this country incredible.
Right.
And we should always support whoever's there.
Right.
Regardless of our beliefs, political or otherwise.
True.
Because can you imagine? Like, let me give you, and I'll be frank with you, there are people who were almost cheering on when we were at the time struggling to restructure our debt. They were cheering, another filo,
I'm
like, why would you say
that? It's a great failure.
Yeah.
We all fail. When one person
fails. And we succeeded.
Exactly.
But the fact is, it's like, imagine watching the national team. You don't like the coach. So you want your team to...
No. Until that chap is fired, I'm not going to support this team.
Exactly.
Like, how do you do that?
And that's the core of... So ultimately, it's about God. And I just wanted to sort of encapsulate that point, that it's about putting God first and in a very genuine way, not in a preachy way. I'm not trying to... The point is, it should be seen and felt in the way one behaves, the way one engages.
That's right.
To me, that's the biggest... evidence is loving one another, treating others the way you want to be treated, and God being the ultimate.
Well, I can actually vouch for that, and I think it's something I've said to you before. The Jito we knew then and the Jito we know now is the same person, and that is a breath of fresh air. I'll tell you now, there are people who I call sir now because, hey, you figure, hey, it's still my bro. Hey, bro. Hello. And you're like, oh. And you immediately realize just the hello that's coming back at you. You're like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. How would you like me to assist here, sir? Yeah. And things change. And you're like, wow, when did this happen? When did we get here?
Sure.
Yeah. So back to your lifestyle.
Sure.
Would you say you're organized or spontaneous and go with the flow?
So, I'm a combination of both for sure. I think the first is always be organized. I think always have an agenda.
Right.
I've got some very specific rules. There's a time, specific time I get up. There's a specific time I pray. There's a specific time I go to the gym.
Right.
Time I get into office.
Right.
And of course, there's travel in between. There's a lot of different things. There's also specific times that I allow myself to have meetings.
Right.
And I'll tell you why.
Right.
So one of my productivity hacks is never allow the first 2 to 3 hours in your day to have meetings in them, because you're allowing an external force to influence your agenda. Because everyone should always set the agenda for them, like their own life. So let me give an example. If in a given week, I have an agenda to, of course, you know, help the president to ensure that we get X amount of financing for the energy sector.
Right.
That's my focus. The first 2-3 hours of the day will be focused on me devising that agenda in terms of, you know, of course, doing the paperwork associated with that.
Right.
Doing channeling out communications, putting it out. If I receive anything, it'll take me off that agenda. Because someone might email me, hey, I'm from Chinsali. I have some problems. It happens. Right. I get, trust me, people email me all the time.
Right.
But I only attend to that after 11. Because my mind has to be focused on executing what it is that is within my agenda.
Right.
Then whatever I invite into my life now, because everyone carries, let me put it this way, in a simplistic way, everyone carries a certain amount of energy. Energy in terms of information and things that impact how your day is going to go. So if, say, for example, someone comes to my office and says, oh, I've come, there's a big water project I want you to look at. That's taken away from the energy that is my agenda for that day.
Correct.
So I might shift, and that's where the spontaneity, it does come, but this is why it's also good to have a good support system where I can put that to a colleague and say, okay, you know what, that water project is important.
Yeah.
Let me do this in this moment, but right now I need to execute the following.
Right.
And of course then, because you have to know when to switch the context.
Yes.
Because if you don't, then you're not achieve as much. I'm a big believer that no matter how many hours I work, I will deliver more than a lot of people can.
Right.
Because of the time frame, because of the manner in which my day is structured. It's all about deliverable. And that's what the president believes. He always talks about the fact that a lot of people get into office, maybe 8 to finish, they knock off at 17, and they're proud that they've worked.
Mm.
But no, what did you actually achieve?
What's the output?
Exactly. It's about output.
Yeah.
And to me, it's key to as a productivity hack. Gym is very important. Prayer is very important. Sleep is very important.
Yeah.
Those factors are key, but also being specific, being deliberate, being intentional with activities, knowing when to put what in. I do, even my community work, it's all scheduled. Everything is scheduled.
Mm.
Time with friends, scheduled. And of course, you should allow some degree of flexibility.
Yes.
So that's how I structure my.
We've seen your socials.
Yeah.
And we know for a fact that you're a bit of a gym addict. You love to be in the gym. We could say you have a high iron diet.
Well, let me put it this way. I look at it as part of my productivity hacks.
Right.
The same way it's important to eat healthy. Mm. The same way it's important to read, to pray. Gym is like a workout. The way reading a book is a workout for the brain.
Right.
And prayer is a workout for the spirit.
Yes.
But Jim, your body is the vessel that carries your spirit, that carries you in terms of productivity.
Yep.
If I'm going to be, you know, traveling in a gruesome schedule, let me tell you something. I work for a workaholic.
Oh,
people don't know this.
We have heard.
Oh,
we have heard.
People know it now. But the fact is, he works a lot.
Yeah.
And he's someone who he'll get off a flight, go straight into a meeting, fly off to a traditional ceremony, back in the office. You know, he moves and he's 24/7. You know, and for me to keep up with that, I need to have, your body has to be capable. And the reality is when you're working out, whether you're on a treadmill, whether you're pushing weights, it enhances your stamina.
Yes.
Even with your mind to apply itself.
Mm.
So for me, I need food.
Yes.
So it's not even about aesthetics. Some people feel like, oh,
he must be good. Buff.
it's the being buff. I don't think I'm that buff, but it's a consequence of something. It's like when you read a lot of books and you become, say, a little more intelligent or more knowledgeable, people will see it in the way you speak.
Exactly.
So that's just a consequence of the effort to do it.
Yes.
But we do it in order to deliver more value. So if I'm going to be a better public official, then part of the package to make me more effective, because guess what? I'm getting hundreds of calls per day. I have so many meetings per week.
Right.
I have to be in, you know, Chipata, I have to be in Chinsali. I'm everywhere. I'm
on the go. Belt.
Meeting with people. I'm in the markets. I have to stand there for hours.
Right.
Guess what? The gym is what enables me to do that even better.
Yeah.
And I can maintain the same attitude,
right. The
consistency because of that. So that's why, call it an addiction, yeah, but I'm addicted to the value it creates.
Yes.
Not because guess what? I don't, pumping iron is not that fun.
No, it's a painful experience.
Exactly.
That's what it coined the phrase, no pain, no gain. There is pain.
I need to mention this. It's one of the greatest analogies of what makes people successful in life.
Mm.
Because the way muscle works, it needs three fundamental things.
Right.
One, it needs resistance. When you pick up a weight and pull it, and the heavier the weight, the bigger your muscle will be. Yeah. It tells you also about life. The bigger your challenges, the stronger you'll be after those challenges are resolved.
To overcome. And
Number two, you need to be consistent. If you don't do that consistently, you will not continue to grow consistently. The second is you always need to make sure that you feed it with the right diet, the right protein and so on. So for me, I look at that as the people I associate with, the type of information I digest. It helps me, you know, be better in what I do. The third is you need rest, because you could be consistent,
true,
you could pump iron, but you also need a period where you're able to zoom out, reflect, reset, and go back
and
into
go
it.
Back in.
And that's why I look at that as one of the greatest analogies of how I guide people, even my mentees, on how they can operate in life.
Wow. And you spoke about diet a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, little known fact, it is said you're a vegetarian.
Okay, so I have a bit of an update.
Moving quickly along.
Yes, I'll tell you. So I was for about 6 years.
Right.
So I did not eat any meat, no animal product for 6 years. And it was very good for me. It taught me a couple of lessons. One is that you become infinitely healthier. That's for sure. That's a fact.
Mm.
And I've experienced it. Two, it also teaches you discipline. If you can cut out something you like, it almost feels like fasting.
Right.
It tells you that you can actually do anything, you know, in order to achieve a certain goal. And I was very proud of that. What made me break that is when I travel around the country,
I'm
sitting with people in Kitwe, I'm with people in Kasama, I'm invited for lunch. I'm not going to turn down on this.
No.
Culturally, it's so rude.
No, that's extremely rude.
Yeah.
You just our food.
Exactly.
No, we're not good enough for it. Yeah. Oh.
So that's what made me decide, okay, you know what? I'm going to stop being vegetarian. I'm going to eat with the people.
Right.
Whatever they're eating, I'm going to eat them.
Yeah.
Eat with them.
Right.
And that is ultimately, so it's really part of the core. But if I wasn't in public service, I'd probably still be vegetarian. Mm. And it's really by choice, not because I had any health problems.
Yeah.
I had learned quite a bit about, you know, let me tell you an interesting story. So you look at two people, two 80-year-olds, one vegetarian, one not. It is evident who's vegetarian.
Yeah.
One will look at least 10, 15 years younger.
Correct.
The health
set
of goals, the results are very real.
Very obvious, extremely obvious. And that's a healthy lifestyle, something that we've definitely observed from you. And I like the fact that you pointed out something regarding balance.
Mm.
You can't go off and just keep reading books and imbalance the physical. It's like, okay, so all this intellect and all this capability, and you're not able to deliver it because you're worn out halfway through your session of delivering a lecture or giving a talk or giving a speech or a presentation.
Sure.
And so that balance is something that probably people would do well to invest in.
Absolutely.
And I think to the credit of most Zambian people now, it's a trend that we've noticed over the years.
Yeah.
There was a time you'd hit the road at 4 a.m, driving out of town, and you'd be on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You drive on the roads now, and you've got people drenched in sweat, and you say, what time did you start running? You're sweaty at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, how did this happen? And I think as a nation, we're definitely getting there. There are groups forming around every shopping mall, and that's their starting point for a run or a walk or some aerobics activity. Yeah. And it's good to see people who are in public service also embracing that fully.
Absolutely. I don't want to be that's what you call it, the stereotype of a senior government official, the big belly. You know,
just like heavy government official.
I'm like, no. And like you said, I don't want to change who I am as a person by virtue of title, by virtue of anything. Because the things, you know, titles are like decorations.
Yeah.
They change, they come and go, especially when you work in the public domain. Part of me does look forward to, you know, going back into the private sector with all the lessons I've learned.
Right.
I think it'd be an incredible experience.
You know what it's like on both sides of the equation.
Exactly.
Yeah, you already have the public and private, so a living PPP.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, obviously, the stresses of your job.
Yeah.
On the outside looking in, we can only imagine that. Mm. What do you do to decompress? So your day is done, or allegedly done, because at any point, you know, your phone's a hotline.
Yes.
And it will ring at a moment's notice, and there's an assignment that comes up. But in those quiet moments when the phone isn't ringing, and you say, okay, my day is done, I've achieved my objectives for the day, I'm heading home. What is typical decompression for you?
So I think the first is family, spending time with family.
Right.
I think there's always a very heartwarming feeling to be with them.
Right.
That's one. I'll admit that occasionally I do play some PlayStation by myself.
What game specifically?
I like, they've not changed it to FC now, it's FIFA.
FIFA, there we go.
Yeah, I play that. I don't have much time to watch TV. Hmm. But also, I found a way to, of course, family and some of my alone time, a bit of reading in there is good decompression. But I found peace in actually going and meeting with people in the street. So when you see me, say, watching a football game in Baolin, that's part of my decompression.
Right.
I don't see that as work.
Right.
I will do stuff to help them. I might arrange some footballs, some jerseys.
Right.
For me, the fulfillment I get from that is very rewarding. So for me, it's like the social engagements with the public.
Right.
I think naturally I just love people.
Mm.
And I draw a lot of inspiration from people. And I love deep conversations with people from all walks of life. You know, whether it be talking to a marketeer, talking to a construction worker, talking to truck drivers. I mean, there are times when, and they know, and those who are going to watch this, whether it be the truck drivers, all my friends, that I'll go and hang out at the truck park. Right. Some of it you won't see. Maybe you've seen a bit of it on social media, but some of it you won't. So my decompression is very blended. Some of it could involve me literally sitting with a bunch of people, some mobile money operators near my neighborhood, near where I live.
Having conversations.
You know, mentoring people, being on calls. I do love listening to podcasts as well. So there's some great minds out there who share some very interesting insights.
Right.
So that's really part of the decompression. Though that period is always very scarce, you know, extremely scarce, actually. Yeah. So I also find some peace in my work, knowing that, you know what? Yes, it's stressful because the stakes are very high.
Right.
Because what we do is not only associated with the head of state, but it has an impact on 20 million citizens.
Yes.
So and of course you are having to absorb the challenges of 20 million citizens, whether it be the cost of living, whether it's the power deficit. So you're constantly anxiously looking for ways to resolve those challenges.
Right.
It doesn't mean that we don't know those challenges. We know them.
Right.
But sometimes about time, you know, at which point, how long does it take to build a power station? Sometimes it takes 2 years.
Exactly.
You know, the power deficit started last year. If we're hit by this drought, we have to find alternatives quickly.
Yes.
And those solutions will come through. So I love the idea that I could be on the phone with a developer who's doing a power station in Chisamba, and you just keep me updated. Oh, yeah, we're at this stage. Okay, come to me.
Right.
That is, to me, the blend of work and decompression.
Right. If your life was a movie, what would the title be?
Oh, my goodness. That's powerful. Right. Your questions are amazing. What title should the movie be? I would say it has to be something connected to empathy, though empathy would be a very boring title. Something that, so One of my favorite poets, and you'd be surprised to hear this, is actually, I consider him a poet, he was a rapper, but the late Tupac Shakur.
Oh, wow. Yeah, people's poet.
Yeah. So, and there's a poem he did called The Rose That Grew Out of Concrete.
Right.
Not to say that I want to borrow that, yes. but something similar to that. That everything I do is against the odds. I'll tell you, in many instances in my life, I was never seen to be deserving
right.
or didn't belong
right.
there.
Right.
You know, whether it be, there was a school, actually, you know, in fact, let me sort of adjust the answer I was going to share. But okay. So when I was appointed to the board of Airtel,
right.
I was too young, I was too inexperienced, I was too this and too that. I was always too something
right.
when I went there.
Right.
When I was running a fund and I'm deploying this capital, there was right. always a reason why I should not be in that situation.
Right.
When I got appointed to be special assistant president, there was some out there who say, he's too this, he's too that. So the point yeah. is, I've actually never belonged anywhere. Wow. But and yet, I've always been there.
Right.
So it's almost like there's the stone that the builder refused.
Yeah.
Yeah, becoming yeah. a cornerstone. So
right.
I would call myself the cornerstone.
Oh, there we go. Coming soon. Yeah. Feel to be you.
So,
Chitoka Yumba.
Yeah.
In.
It's like you very
the cornerstone.
Exactly. So that's your title. So you see, I was working it.
Yeah, we're figuring it out. I can hear the gears turning. Yeah. Now it came together nicely.
Yeah.
But so I notice you've talked to people in academia, but you also feel and look extremely comfortable talking to people on the street.
Sure.
So we're going to throw you a quick challenge over
sure.
here.
No problem.
If you needed to give advice, investment advice mm-hmm. to a 12-year-old,
mm-hmm.
what would that sound like?
Oh, wow. Okay. So first and foremost, I'd ask the 12-year-old what they like most
right.
in their lives.
Right.
They might say, okay, I'm a 12-year-old. I want to buy a PlayStation. I right. say, okay, your target, every investment advice should begin with a target. What do you want to achieve?
Mm-hmm.
How much money do you want mm-hmm. to accumulate and what for? So now that you've established your why, how much is a PlayStation? I don't know the amount.
Yeah.
Whatever
yes.
amount it costs.
X amount. Yes.
So now I would say now every activity you're involved in should be linked to that target.
Right.
So whether right. you're making money from chores, because sometimes you know kids get money from
yes. Yes.
allowances, whatever.
Yes.
To say how much of that can you put aside? And where will you take that in order for that money to grow, in order for you to eventually get your PlayStation?
Right.
Because again, investments should have a goal in mind. An objective.
Right.
Some invest for capital preservation, some for capital growth.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's about wealth being enhanced.
Right.
Now, of course, it's different. Now, of course, if you're talking about a 12-year-old, it'd be very difficult to talk to a 12-year-old about stocks or bonds because they're not even permitted to at that stage. So I would look at it from in a very simple way. In simple trading, I'd
right.
say, okay, so what are people your age doing? Where do they spend their money?
Right.
In other countries, you've got kids who sell lemonade in
exactly.
their neighborhood.
Exactly.
You know, kids who do different little things. So I'd ask them to say, what do your friends usually buy on the playground?
Right.
What do they, whenever they get money from the parents, what do they spend? Then if it does, they buy sweets. Okay. What if I told you that you can go to that store over there, buy a big bag of sweets for, you know, X amount,
yes.
say each
yes.
sweet is 5 kwacha, and you sell it to each of those kids for 10 kwacha, and you make a margin on that, how that sound? And then you go and actually do it.
Right.
So the key is, and this is part of being perspicacious, business ideas
right.
come out of having that curiosity to look around at your society to understand how do things work? What do people need?
Right.
And then mobilizing not only the knowledge, but the ability to execute and provide for that value that's needed, right?
Right.
And that's where you make money. That's where wealth comes from. That's where things of that nature happen. So to me, that's the type of advice I'd give.
That's solid. That's solid, yeah. practical and relevant as
Absolutely.
Well.
For a 12-year-old.
Yeah, for a 12-year-old.
Yeah,
it works. And right. they need it basically. They shouldn't walk away from you feeling confused. Like, what did he just
yeah.
say?
Yeah.
It exactly. should make sense to them.
Yeah.
And here's a fantasy question.
Mm-hmm.
$10,000
mm-hmm.
handed to you at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And you're told, you need to spend this by midnight.
Yeah.
You have 24 hours to spend it. What are you buying?
Oh, what am I? I believe, okay, so one, I appreciate God has been very good to me. Even before government, I've been able to, and I'm not that excited about material things.
Right.
Once I have the basics, bit of clothing here, food, I'm okay. I will always spend it on somebody else. Oh. I will find somebody where I could be an angel investor. $10,000 is about 270,000 kwacha. I'll call somebody and say, what would you do with 100,000 kwacha? How would you turn that into value that will help you? And it basically, I'll structure it into some form of a loan.
Right.
The reason I believe in loans is because if you give someone money for free, they'll not really appreciate it as much. So I would call someone, and if they tell me, oh no, I'm selling tomatoes, I buy it at this place, I sell it at this for this amount. If I had 100,000, this is how much I would grow it, and I would invest in them. That's how I would use $10,000, is I would invest in a person's idea to help enhance it, because the satisfaction I'll have from that business becoming successful is greater than any item I could buy. Whether I buy clothes, buy, you know, $10,000, you might buy a car, you know. There's one thing you can buy.
Exactly.
But I'd rather partner with a guy and say, can we find like a bus, like a mini bus for $10,000 when I will become business partners? So that in addition to, because that $10,000 should come back.
Exactly. So, exactly.
And that's the mindset I have when it comes to dealing with money. It's
right.
Not just about it being exhausted.
No.
It's about how does this money eventually become $20,000 in the next 3 years.
How do we grow this?
Exactly.
Right.
So I would acquire an asset that generates money, but in conjunction with somebody who can run a business, who's knowledgeable in that business.
Right.
That's it.
Right. What's on the horizon for you? What's the big dream?
For me, I'm focused on now, which is helping the president to the best of my capacity. He's already is a visionary. He's someone with an incredible mind in terms of intellectually. He's got a huge heart and love for this country. And a lot of what I do really is inspired by him. So whether it be my community work, because that's not what I used to do before.
Right.
And because I know he can't be everywhere. So if I'm in the community, know that it's inspired by the fact that he would have loved to be there, but he's got so many other things. He's got 20 million people to tend to, right? So he needs... And like every president in the world has a support system, has a team who does a number of things. So the key really is to deliver on enormous economic growth for this country that takes more people out of poverty than has ever happened in the history of our country, to create more jobs than at any other point in time. 20 million citizens relying, who are hopeful for a better life, for food security, for energy security, to be able to take their kids to school. Everything that we're doing is about that. And to me, that's really where my heart, where my mind is it's attached to a vision that is already in place, that's being led by the president. So for me, I look at my horizons being associated with when the GDP growth gets to double digit, when this country's economy is $50 billion plus, there'll be so much wealth in this country and so many lives will have improved that even when I transition back into the private sector, I'll be able to pick up where I left off, my private equity firm, quadruple its size, you know, leveraging on various relationships, pulling in more capital, investing in more companies, creating more jobs as a private citizen, not as a government official, being able to branch out into other countries, being able to, and because at that point in time, I'd have the freedom to go and, you know, and interact with people internationally. I'm learning so much from so many people around the world. And I want to do more that as value, maybe do have an agreement with one of the universities where I could lecture from time to time. I could continue to run business because I'm still relatively young, so got time on my hands. So still have time to build businesses. I definitely want to be an angel investor in addition to being a venture capitalist, because again, my passion is investment for impact, for a better life, and really do more to help citizens in this country. And I'll tell you, I'll close by saying this. I have a very clear purpose, is to be an enabler of access to finance, to be an enabler of a better quality of life for jobs, for that kid who was walking on the side of the road, who was in a difficult situation.
Yeah.
Because so long as if his life improves as a result of my work, then I would have fulfilled my purpose as a human being having been put on this earth. And always continue to rely on God to guide me, to direct me. I don't know what the future holds, but so long as I have God with me, anything is possible.
Oh, brilliant. And someone probably stumbles upon Nkwazi Unfiltered and says, oh, that was an interesting conversation. Where do they follow you? Where can they learn more?
Sure. All right. Yeah. So I am on TikTok. I'm on Instagram. I'm right. on X, Facebook. It's Jito Kayumba, my name, as I'm sure right. it's somewhere on the screen, right? And yeah, I'm easily, I think I should be verified on all the platforms, I hope. I need to check.
Let's see if the tick is there.
Yeah. But, right. but that's where they could find me.
And fantastic.
Hopefully one day in a book or something like that.
Ah, yes. We look forward to the book sure. and the movie. The cornerstone. We haven't forgotten the cornerstone. Happy to do the trailer for you.
And you'd be the right guy for that, for sure.
Ah, super. Thank you so very much. It's been absolutely amazing having this conversation with you. Lots of good insights. We've learned way more about you than we knew or we thought we knew.
Sure.
And it's really just amazing that you managed to find time to be here because we know how busy your schedule is. And for you to be able to block this off. And what's amazing is your phone hasn't rung once.
It's on silent.
Oh, okay. That explains things. That explains what I was about to say. We experienced a miracle out here. So there's a lot of catch up that's going to happen after this.
Yeah.
Thank you so very, very much. Truly grateful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much for watching another exciting episode of Nkwazi Unfiltered. We had a chat with a gentleman who's unraveled a little bit more of the mysterious side of his life. And this is Mr. Jito Kayumba. Truly grateful for his presence on the show. And we look forward to catching you wherever you catch Nkwazi Unfiltered. This is Kamisa Chikula. Thank you so very much.